This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Kelly Stogner of Normal saw a social media post from someone asking for a kidney and saw herself in April Post.
She was about my age. She was a mom. She had a young child. But I did feel like I could give her something that would help her fully enjoy her life.
Turned out it was a match. Plus, restaurant owners say the price for a dinner out might go up because of a worker shortage. There is no beer in outer space, but the Challenger Learning Center in Normal has a beer-related science puzzle game on a virtual space station. And oral histories of Black McLean County residents have inspired a new musical performance.
All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. The Bloomington Fire Department wants to build two new fire stations to reduce response times on the city's east side. New Fire Chief Eric West says the department is exploring possible sites in northeast Bloomington. Response times there are longer than the national standard of 6 minutes. West says if the department shifts personnel to that site from its station on East Empire Street, it would want to replace that station with a new station west of Veterans Parkway.
The study showed that if we move the station and close that station three down and move to the northeast, now again we've left more of a gap in that central part of town that we may have troubles making some times.
West says the city is still in the early planning stages. He says he'd like the city to buy the land within the next year before prices jump. The town of Normal may spend about $353,000 to dig a new water well. That's among the proposals going before the council on Monday. Staff say it will let the town abandon two other wells, one near Anderson Pool and another near College Avenue in Anderson Park. Staff say a test drilling suggests a new well nearby will produce about 400 gallons of water per minute. The old wells have deteriorated and become clogged with sand. They each produce only 60 to 80 gallons per minute. The drilling would start in late May. The council will also take up whether to spend nearly $2 million on street resurfacing using state motor fuel tax money. An extension to the Route 66 bike trail could get Normal Council attention next week as well. The roughly $471,000 contract would extend the trail from the intersection of Beach and Pine Streets through One Normal Plaza, around a detention basin, and to the current trail end at Towanda Avenue and Shelbourne Drive. From there, the existing trail goes to Towanda and points north. More than a third of the cost will come from a state grant. The proposal is part of the town's overall bicycle pedestrian master plan. The McLean County Health Department says there are 95 new coronavirus cases. Hospitalizations and active cases continue to climb. McLean County has also reached 100,000 vaccines distributed. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. BNA's educational video series, Hear My Story, continues with local patient Gina Barnhart.
The first time I tried hearing aids, it was too overwhelming. But then once I didn't have them, then it was kind of like, oh, I kind of miss hearing some of those sounds.
Gina's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's Public Media. The unemployment rate for the McLean County area labor market may have been 5.1% last month, but it's a lot lower in certain job sectors. Restaurants, for instance, have had difficulty finding enough people to staff operations. WGLT first reported on the shortage in February as pandemic restrictions began to ease. It has worsened substantially since then, according to owners and observers like Larry Carius, who writes about the Bloomington Normal restaurant scene.
I've been around the restaurant business here in Bloomington Normal for a long time, and I've not seen the labor shortage as we're looking at right now.
Rob Dobbs, restaurant owner Bob Dobsky, says his operation is down about 15 to 20% from a full staff. Ken Mishka of the Epiphany Farms group of restaurants says his operation has about half the workers it did before the pandemic. Mishka says he is short 20 to 30 people and only operating 60 to 70% of the hours the eateries would like to be open. There are several reasons for the continued shortage. Larry Carrier says it's partly a bottleneck in the supply.
Every restaurant is opening their dining room at the same time. That means they all need more employees to staff the dining room, to staff the kitchen. Everybody's hiring at the same time, which makes the labor shortage even worse.
Restaurant sector employees also tend to be among the younger members of the labor pool. Bob Dobsky says until recently they may not have had access to vaccines that would help them feel safe and willing to return to work.
Now a lot more people will get it, and hopefully that's going to loosen things up and make people more comfortable.
There's also a possibility the shortage in food service workers may be a longer-term challenge. Dobsky says a lot of people left for other job sectors after mass layoffs and tight operating restrictions from the pandemic, and those may not come back.
One gentleman went to work as a painter. He was working in the kitchen as a cook and that. Another one went to a cleaning service. It might have been even for State Farm and that. So if there wasn't that consistency and people have bills yet and raising families and having to do that, they've got to get some regular income.
Ken Mishka of Epiphany Farms agrees switching fields might be more attractive than coming back to a part-time gig or trying to patch together full-time restaurant sector work among several places that still have lower than normal capacity limits.
There's a lot of people in the industry that have given up or went to their second job, and they, you know, it's too inconsistent to guarantee that, you know, you're going to have good income and good wages and good shifts. And so we're just don't see an enthusiastic workforce that's coming back, you know, online as we would have seen in the past.
Even increased hiring at Rivian, as beneficial to the community as it is, has also helped make truck drivers for liquor distributors and restaurant workers scarce. Mishka, Carius, and Dobsky all say another factor in the labor shortage is government relief efforts have created potential disincentives to work.
I think people aren't really caring about full-time work because of the subsidies the government's issuing out for unemployment and for the virus and that, too.
The effect of the shortage is pressure to raise wages. Here's Larry Carius.
We see that other jobs have higher starting pay. For example, I think Target is $15 an hour.
The minimum wage has risen over the last year and will go from $11 an hour to $12 an hour in July. Bob Dobsky says owners will continue to have to bump up pay, though so far it has not increased applications.
Right now, if you're going to get any kind of consistency, you've got to be paying, you know, kitchen help $13, $14 an hour for some good experience, you know, grill people, chefs, and all that.
There is a break point, and Ken Mishka says restaurants are getting close.
No, the restaurants have a really hard time hitting that. It's extremely difficult, especially as you onboard a younger staff that has less experience and is less efficient at doing the things that are needed. It puts a lot of strain on not only the company, but also the cost of the product.
Until now, Mishka says restaurants have hesitated to raise prices, but he foresees that soon may change. Mishka says Epiphany used to get 12 applications a week. The average is now about 4, and those who do apply trend younger. The pre-pandemic workforce average age was 21 to 24. Mishka says he has seen increases in the proportion of applications from high school students and 17 to 19-year-olds.
And I'm not sure if it's the next generation excited about working with us and just that new crop coming through, or if it has something to do with them being dependent and not receiving the stimulus.
To compensate, restaurants have turned to unusual methods. Several are holding open interview periods and advertising on social media channels. The Epiphany Farms Hospitality Group has even emailed its customer base, highlighting the need and asking for referrals. The inability to handle demand may get worse for restaurants as more people are vaccinated and return to dining out. Business groups may even inadvertently contribute to that possibility with a campaign centered on Restaurant Week in mid-May, designed to stimulate that sector of the economy. The McLean County Chamber of Commerce and Bloomington Normal Convention and Visitors Bureau have created a social media campaign with a variety of promotions and deals to drive people to go out to eat. Restaurant owners all say it will be some time before restaurants return to normalcy. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
This is Sound Ideas and WGLT. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ryan Denham with Dana Vollmer for the Spring Fund Drive. Your contribution at WGLT.org is the boost this fund drive needs from the halfway point to our goal.
Our fund drive is making progress, and we're still on like medium power. But that's not going to be enough because our community deserves a full power newsroom, and that level of coverage requires funding. We need more financial support to get this thing to goal and end this fund drive. Give now at WGLT.org. We know NPR listeners are a smart crowd, so let's do some math. When you read or listen to stories on our website, we know a little bit about you. Not in a creepy way, but anonymous stuff, like our most popular stories, and if you're reading on a mobile device or a desktop computer, for example.
Another thing we also know is about a third of our WGLT.org readers and listeners are extremely loyal. You come back again and again each month. You're not just coming by for a quick visit just because some story went viral. You've come to trust us, and you've rewarded us with your loyalty, and we love that. Okay, so now for the math. Picture a party of 100 people. Let's call them the WGLT website superfans. And I really do want to have a party with these people because they're probably very cool. But okay, so you've got this group of 100 people in your mind, right? Well, if just 15 of those people decided to give WGLT $10 a month, this fund drive, it would be over today, right now. We'd be at goal. We'd pack it up, go home, and start considering all the things again. That's all this fund drive needs, a small part of our most loyal online readers and listeners to donate.
WGLT doesn't go on the air without you, and that math lesson doesn't compute without you either. You power public media in your community, and you can do that with a quick contribution right now at WGLT.org.
And you and your financial contribution in any amount will give this fund drive a boost, help us meet our goal. So give right now at WGLT.org.
This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media. A single mom lives to raise her child. A man gets to live pain-free and play with grandchildren. Organ donors in Bloomington Normal made it possible. Often, doctors harvest organs from people who have just died. Sometimes, though, the donors get to see the lives they touch. Student reporter Katrina Peterson has more.
April Post is a busy single mom who's living her best life in Normal. It's a life made possible by a kidney she received from Kelly Stogner in Peoria this past year. Post says it made a huge difference.
Of course, when I woke up, I was groggy and in pain, but I had so much energy. I just felt so energized when I woke up. So hungry. When I was on dialysis, I had like no appetite, and yeah, like I ordered food like right away.
Post was on an organ donation list, but took it upon herself to find her kidney. She even had a sign made up to put it in the back window of her car. Kelly Stogner works at Heartland Community College. Her boss and Heartland Community College president Keith Cornell also donated a kidney, a small thing that brings them closer. Both Cornell and Stogner say they rarely think about the procedure.
You just go on living your life, and you did what you did, and you helped somebody else, and they're living their life, and you're living your life.
That's so very true. I mean, you don't think about it day to day. And a part of that is probably because we don't have to take the medications. We didn't have the hardship of like someone else has had.
Kelly Stogner came across a video on social media that shared April Post's story. Post was diagnosed with kidney failure due to a birth defect. Stogner saw herself in Post. Nearly 2 years ago, Stogner learned she was a match.
She was about my age. She was a mom. She had a young child. Of course, my child was not young at that time, which was one of the things that helped the decision for me was that I didn't have anyone young at home to take care of. But I did feel like I could give her something that would help her fully enjoy her life with her daughter.
Keith Cornell says his transplant recipient worked two doors down from him when he was in Wisconsin.
You can see what it's doing to them. I mean, I got to see it every single day. And what are you going to do? You're going to just not try? I don't know. I felt like I had to try at least.
Cornell says testing feels like a maybe. Then suddenly there's a match.
And it was like, oh, okay. Now we have to get serious with this. For me to know that this man got to spend more days with his grandchildren and listen to them and laugh with them and, you know, help them grow up and everything, that's kind of what drove me.
Cornel says he still gets together with his recipient. They talk often and sometimes golf together. They usually get together for Kidney Day. For them, that's in June. Kelly Stogner and April Post aren't as close. They have met a few times since the surgery. Stogner says the recipients sometimes don't continue a relationship after the transplant.
I think they're very grateful for the gift and the new life they have, but they would like to look more to the future than to the past. And so I don't want to be the person that brings up like, oh, here I am, look what I did. So we'll get together once in a while and just check in. But for the most part, she's living her life and I'm living mine.
April Post is back to work at the McLean County Health Department as a COVID tracker.
A lot of people that have kidney failure, they're afraid to ask people, you know, if they can donate a kidney. I don't know if it's pride or if they're just scared that these other people aren't going to help them, or they're just afraid that the family members or whoever will get sick down the road because of this. But, you know, you don't have to be scared. You know, just reach out. You know, it could really help you.
Post says even if you go to donate and you find out you're not a match, you can still donate and the person you wanted to save will move higher up on the list because the person who received your donation moves off the list. Heartland Community College President Keith Cornell says he's glad he gave his kidney.
When you get to help somebody that's truly needing it, there's no better feeling in the whole world.
More than 100,000 men, women, and children in the United States are waiting for transplants. I'm Katrina Peterson.
Each day, 20 people die because the organ they need is not donated in time. April is National Organ Donor Month. This is Sound Ideas. Please make a contribution to support the news and information you use every day here on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org. Usually they don't allow beer on the space station, but when it's a virtual space station, you're fine. The Science of Beer comes into orbit Saturday during an online class for adults called Brews, Booze, and Bubbles Virtual Escape Room. It's offered by the Challenger Learning Center at Heartland Community College. Ryan Denham speaks with the Center Associate Director Julia Osler about this virtual immersive experience.
Groups with up to four people can play and try to escape our virtual escape room, and our escape room is a virtual space station. The whole premise is to escape this space station. You're going to have to solve interactive puzzles, clues, trivia, knowledge, all revolving around beer, specifically the science of beer. So how is it made? How is it produced? And to put that into context, we paired up with local breweries here in town, Kent Grove and Little Beaver, and we were able to kind of bring that science to life by using just some fun local facts and information, so you get to learn about the science and play with friends at the same time.
So those who are playing, you know, have to solve puzzles, you know, as they go, without, you know, giving away too much. Can you give me an example of a beer-related, science-related puzzle?
Ooh, yep, that's going to be tricky, but we can try. Our participants, you will board the virtual space station, and then you will be prompted with a very specific and unique challenge and situation that arises. And to solve that challenge, you're going to be moving throughout the space station, and each of the rooms that you're going to be entering represents a different process of the brewing system. So you'll be exploring these rooms that have to do with everything about beer and how it's made. So from the malting to the mashing to the fermentation, kind of the things that make really specific types of beers. And again, we were really excited to be able to partner up with Keg Grove and Little Beaver. They gave us some great inside information to how they brew, what makes their brewing processes so unique and special.
As you said, you worked with Keg Grove and Little Beaver, a couple of local brewers, to get some insight into how they make their beer. What were those conversations like?
I know our team, we just learned so much. So again, we really focused heavy on like the science, and that kind of, that's what got us excited. But what was really cool was to be able to then talk with Keg Grove and Little Beaver and actually see the science in action and really see how they tweaked it to get those really specific flavor and combinations that make their beers so unique and memorable. And again, to put this all in the context of the community, it's always great when we can partner up with community members to bring programming like this to folks in our area.
So this is a virtual escape room. Is that what it sounds like? People are going to be at home, but trying to escape a, you know, like a Zoom room or something?
Yeah. So folks will be at home and it's done over Zoom. And then once you log in with your team, we put everyone into breakout rooms. And then just like a regular escape room, we have our game master who is going to be able to go in and provide clues and guidance. And you have 1 hour to actually escape your virtual room. And there's a timer going the whole time too, so there's a nice added layer of you can see the countdown clock.
All right, so how could people sign up? Are there still slots available?
We do have spots available still for teams to sign up. If you don't have a team and you would just like to sign up solo, we also have a sort of like community team that we can place people on. Folks can visit our Facebook page and we have an event for the program, Brews, Booze, and Bubbles.
That's Julia Osler, Associate Director of the Challenger Learning Center at Heartland Community College, speaking with Ryan Denham. This is the WGLT Spring Fund Drive. Please contribute to support the programming that you love and enjoy and that you find helps interpret the world to you. Make a contribution now at WGLT.org. Art and activism have always gone hand in hand for experimental sound artist Alan Moore. Arts correspondent Brianna Groh talks with Moore about his upcoming live performance that draws from the oral histories of Black McLean County residents.
Chicago-based experimental sound artist Alan Moore says after the atrocities committed against people of color in 2020, he wanted to find a way to mark the moment.
I do think that like it's important to make a statement and make work about like, yeah, what's going on? What is happening during this pandemic?
Moore's statement takes the form of a free Sonic Arts performance streaming live at 7 p.m. Saturday, April 24th. Moore says many people were forced to grapple with the reality of racism in 2020, something he was all too familiar with growing up.
You know, I was talked to and told as a young man before I was even 10 multiple times about the importance of Black my like skin and what I'm doing and what I'm not doing. Specifically, remember I had a toy gun and like my aunt was like, you cannot walk around with that. You cannot play with that in public.
Moore's previous works have featured speeches from historic Black activists like Malcolm X, but the personal is also political, and this time Moore plans to draw on more than his own stories to illuminate the Black experience. Moore will sample the oral histories included in the McLean County Museum of History's Black History Project. Museum Director of Community Education Candace Summers says Black community members started the project in 1984 to preserve their unique history, from living under segregation at the turn of the century to joining the civil rights movement. While anyone can access select transcripts on the museum's website, Summers says Moore's project will give viewers, herself included, a new way to experience those stories.
So a lot of these names are familiar to me, but I've never heard these people's own voices. I mean, this stuff is in my museum, but it's not like I can just go down there and listen on, you know, on a computer or, you know, a tape recorder.
Moore says his experience interacting with the tapes was an intimate one.
It's like almost a little tough because I've gone through not only just the audio, but just actual like holding these records. It echoes a lot of what I know of my history and like Black history and people of color history. But no matter how much you think you know, when you're going through that and hearing real voices, you're reading real words from like real people. And it's something almost otherworldly about it.
Moore hopes viewers will have a similar reaction to his performance.
I think the audio, the nature of it, some of it will be uncomfortable. I want people to really understand the importance of like me being a Black person standing in front of these people, like performing, but ultimately like a statement of resiliency, like I am here, we are here.
The performance is the culmination of a year's worth of work as an artist in residency at Point Forward. Eddie Brettweiser is the founder and director of the Bloomington-based nonprofit. He says artists typically already have a work ready to perform when they approach a venue.
But, you know, we recognize that there's like this really kind of like fragile period where you're trying to conceive and get a new work up off the ground, where you need time and space and money in many instances to make that thing actually come into fruition.
Brett Weiser says Point Forward created the Artist in Residency program to not only eliminate the barriers to creating new works, but also provide a physical space to share those works. Before the pandemic, that place was supposed to be the McLean County Museum of History, offering a unique setting with unmatched acoustics. Brett Weiser says while he's looking forward to hosting live performances again, the partnership is about more than just a venue.
The arts are an important component of keeping us rooted in our history and keeping history relevant and continuing to like shed light on ways in which we're living history day in and day out.
Alan Moore says that's exactly why he chose to include the voices of the Black History Project in his performance. He says it would be beneficial if more people were willing to take a hard look at the past.
It's enraging to see the same things and to grow up and hear people saying that, oh, you know, things are getting better, but the same things that were happening in the past, you know, during civil rights, you know, like it's still happening now. And I think what's happened now is that it's just revealed in the media the reality to the rest of the human population.
Moore hopes his work will inspire viewers to keep engaging with history, lest the current moment remain just a moment. I'm Brianna Groh.
Alan Moore's performance will stream online at 7 p.m. April 24th. For details on how to tune in, follow Point Forward. That's pt.fwd on Instagram and Facebook. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker, and please contribute now to the Spring Fund Drive at wglt.org.